I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. The Newcastle takeover rolls on and Adam Lallana is back on the beach. Come on, it's Wednesday the 29th of July. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Vidushan Hantharaja.
Yes!
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
That was crisp. That was very crisp.
You expanded into the space that you needed, leaving me and Vish very little space.
I left you nothing, boys.
In which to operate.
It's that five-a-side. You just took the ball, you dribbled with it, you didn't want to pass, and then suddenly you ran out of room. You're like, right, you have it.
Yeah, pass it
I'm
backwards.
Selfish like that.
Yeah.
It was nice,
passes.
Though. I enjoyed it thoroughly. How nice was it? This probably isn't the best way to start a football podcast, but how nice was it not to have any football last night? Unless you're a fan of the A-League, of course.
I felt a little bit lost.
Have you ever watched the A-League?
A little bit.
It is brilliant. It is the football equivalent of putting ants in a jar with some spiders. it is just mental because it's also played in ridiculous heat, you know, usually. So, you know, especially when they're playing out in Perth or, you know, Adelaide near the kind of towards the summer. And it is just incredible to watch because it's just back and forth. And it's too hot to do that. And so they do some of the stupidest things you've ever seen. Right. I genuinely recommend everyone to watch it. It's a great way to start the day as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, at 11 o'clock, Venfra Kofu, my Japanese team are going to be playing. So I'll be trying to find a feed for that. More on internet piracy later.
yeah, exactly. We'll get on to that in a minute. I actually spent about an hour and a half watching Unsolved Crimes last night. Well, one of my favourite things to do.
Yeah, we had a small argument about some of the crimes that took place in this TV show on Netflix last night. And we weren't arguing last night. We argued before the show. Jules is a dreamer when it comes to
I
a detective.
I am
very much the Occam's razor of detective mysteries.
You're very much like, yeah, okay, so he fell in the river, he died, he drowned. That's it. Whereas I'm like, no, he was dragged through the hedge. Mm-hmm. He was murdered.
Yeah.
There's all these other side stories to it. I love all that.
I just think that whole series is just a series of unfortunate events. It should be called a series of unfortunate events, if indeed you could call it that.
Bish, I'd like your opinion on this, so maybe catch up.
Next week we can have
a discussion about it.
The flip-flops were damaged. The flip-flops weren't damaged. The mobile phone was intact, Vish.
I'm still reeling from the fact that you described that as a small argument because it definitely wasn't. I feel like I was going to be privy to a very solved mystery there.
Well, I'll tell you who is still arguing quite a lot, and that is Newcastle fans, probably with each other, over why on earth this takeover is being delayed again. I just feel really bad, Pete, for Newcastle fans, because I feel like a few months ago when this takeover was kind of first announced, it felt different. And I sensed that from Newcastle fans who are friends of mine, that they felt it was different as well. They felt like this was the one that was going to get over the line. But yet again, this is now not going to happen.
Well, there was, I mean, it's two kind of rounds of different ethical contortions that the Newcastle fan base have been forced into. I mean, you talk about these cardboard fans in most of the grounds around the world, in most of the major leagues. You could fit some straw men in St. James's Park right now because the contortions that they've been forced into doing, because, you know, they feel aggrieved because they've been booted around by the press for having like the temerity to want some change, want Mike Ashley out of the club, that they're a disgrace for supporting a Saudi takeover. In my opinion, I think that there are some valid points in there. You know, there's a legal framework that exists. We can sell arms to MBS to blow the crap out of Yemen, but we can't sell them a football club. You know, modern life makes hypocrites of us all. The same journalists who work for the same newspapers who are criticising the Geordies for supporting a Saudi takeover will be the same journalists who work for a paper who will be, I don't know, sinking free cocktails at the Isle of Wight Festival, owned by Live Nation, with a 10% stake by the same sovereign wealth fund. They'll be taking adverts from companies like Uber, who are in part owned by the same sovereign wealth fund. They'll be going to the same festivals in the same taxis. Modern life makes hypocrites of us all, and it's really, really difficult for I think any modern football fan to enjoy their football and still say that they're right on and have certainly you know, have human rights at their core. So it is difficult, and I think the IP infringement and the parity situation is, I think, for a lot of people a convenient fig leaf, I think you possibly might say. But I, despite looking and dressing like a freeloading student, I do think people should get paid for what they make, for what they protect. I think they should be protecting their IP. And the Premier League have historically been excellent in sniping away at people. Companies that are infringing on their IP, because simply, why should you know, Qatar be paying a certain amount of money for a product where in the neighbouring country they're paying nothing? They're literally running a state-sponsored, centralised, you know, from satellites.
Yeah.
Space piracy. You know what I mean? This is sexy stuff in the grand scheme of things. We're not talking about Napster peer-to-peer. We're not talking about the Pirate Bay peer-to-peer kind of like user-to-user kind of infringement. This is state-sponsored piracy. So it's not about Newcastle United. It is about the Euros in 2016 and packaging up of sporting events. And Newcastle have kind of been caught in the middle of it. It's fascinating how it's going to play out, but I don't think anything is going to happen soon.
The thing is, though, is I feel that Newcastle actually had a pretty decent season considering this takeover has been going on for the last few months, and now it's obviously not happened.
Yeah.
And actually, the fear is that now coming into next season, this is the time, this off period, and I know it's shorter than normal. There's only, what, 5-6 weeks until the new season begins, and probably less than that for the players who have to come back for pre-season training and get themselves ready for the new season that starts on September the 12th weekend. But this is the time where you want to see growth from your club, isn't it? This is when you want to starting to see something build for next season. You want to see players being brought in. You want to make sure that you know that that is the manager that's going to take you through the next season. And for Steve Bruce right now, I just feel sorry for him, because how does he know where he can take this club next season, Vish, if he doesn't even know who the owners are going to be and what kind of state the club's going to be in?
Yeah, that is a good point. I would say, though, that a lot of his time spent as Newcastle manager has been with his head down, having to crack on with the job, with stuff going on above him that he doesn't really have any say in. I think his main worry is going to be that if there is a takeover and everything is put in place by the start of next season, he will be one of the people to go. Because I think I've said this on this pod before, but if you're going to spend that much money to take over a club, and if you're going to invest in high-profile players, which is generally how this goes, why wouldn't you invest in a high-profile manager, which would be cheaper than, you know, say, having to bring in some of the best names, because you can meet that. In terms of success, you can meet him more than halfway. You don't have to suddenly fill your team with superstars if you get very accomplished, a very good manager. And, you know, Mauricio Pochettino was someone that was pretty much been mentioned since he left Spurs. just off the back of what Pete said, which is absolutely spot on, and kind of deserves to be cut and like placed in a museum somewhere, because society does make hypocrites of us all. And as we often say that football is a reflection of society, football is, well, it just makes us all hypocrites to that regard. And so, you know, you can feel sorry for Newcastle, and the fact that I think that it was the Newcastle Supporters Trust that did a survey, and it said 97% of supporters were in favour of a takeover. And you can skew that towards saying, oh, they're in favour of the Saudi regime taking over, when actually they just want rid of Mike Ashley, don't they?
And I think and they never had a say in who owned the club in the first place.
Absolutely,
so it's a bit rich for a lot of people to pile in on the Geordies like now, because they don't have a say whatever happens. They just want Mike Ashley out of the club.
Yeah.
But if I had the choice between, you know, the fat, feckless asset stripper and people who chop off people's heads and, you know, bomb the crap out of countries, killing women and children, I would probably go with the man who vomits in fireplaces, quite frankly, you know.
And the other thing about that is that, you know, when a lot of Newcastle fans on Twitter get pelters, some of them are pretty out of order for some of the things that they say to journalists who are just openly and honestly reporting the atrocities in Saudi Arabia. But what I would say is part of being a regime like that is, you know, we talk about sports washing, but really they've been able to get away with it because not many people really know about it. Not many people are totally clued up on the situation over there. So it's almost like, you know, a Newcastle fan has this period with Mike Ashley, sick of it. They hear of a takeover. They hear of the billions and billions that could go into the club and into the city as well. Having seen it in Paris, having seen it in Manchester, and think, yeah, of course I want a piece of that.
Yeah.
You know, imagine supporting a club that are going on doing those things, that bring in those kind of players. And so it can be very hard for a football fan to split the two.
Well, look at the way that Xi Jinping, big football fan himself, big soccer fan himself, he a few years ago, obviously there's a lot of Chinese money flooding into football. He just drew a line and said, this isn't supporting the Chinese economy. So the CCP are not as involved in football as it possibly would have been if Xi Jinping had actually made that decision. They're obviously imprisoning, you know, over a million Uyghur Muslims in death camps almost, or certainly re-education camps, let's use it. I mean, it's a human rights abuse, the likes of which we haven't seen in probably a century. And you know, if he had made that decision, they would be more involved in football. I can see a post-COVID world where those kind of deals are more attractive to the Chinese Communist Party, and we will see more Chinese money flooding into the market. So we will have these questions and we'll have these kind of debates over and over again. And there's never a red line. And why is it your club that has to be the red line when there's so many other clubs? You can talk about Sheffield United. That's a different case in point, because it's private money and it's not the sovereign wealth fund. Or you can sort of say, well, everyone's friends together and everyone's in a relationship and it is all very murky. How do you suddenly sort of go, well, this is out of order, this is out of order, this is out of order? Because at the end of the day, there's no leadership from the government of the country. You know, they're all short-termist, you know, right-wing trolls.
I do feel like it's something that we are discussing a lot more now, though, football ownership. And I think that football fans are becoming a lot more savvy to how it all works. As you were saying a minute ago, Vish, people don't often really understand it and don't care to kind of look into it because they just want to see their football club do well. But actually now I think there is a lot more care and a lot more a kind of consideration for football ownership. We see what's happened at Wigan this season. We see what's happening at Charlton at the moment. We've got all these other clubs in the Premier League and it's spoken of quite often now, which I think is a good thing that we're talking about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I also think that, you know, it's a beast that we've created. You know, we lured the Premier League for, you know, without wishing to kind of nail Sky Sports, but, you know, we basically dedicate two nights a year where we see a ticker go up and up and up and we cheer it on every time it goes up and celebrate the, you know, the next 100 million or whatever it is. So this is a beast that we've created, and it's, you know, money does attract people with ulterior motives. I think that's a fundamental truth of the world.
And also football teams, like, why would you bother getting involved in a football team unless you had literally $1 billion to throw into a club over like a period of 5 years to put into the infrastructure of the club? No, you know, we were questioning where, you know, oligarchs were getting their money 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And that's a very recent thing. We all know what happened when the breakup of the USSR ran. We all know where people got their cash. So like to suddenly sort of draw a line here is a little bit strange, but yeah, you're completely right, Vish. It's you would have to be mad to get involved in top flight football and actually think you're going to make a return on it. So it is the preserve. It's not the preserve even of the Mar-a-Lago attendees. It's the people who own literal states who can actually get involved and affect a positive upturn for a football team, I think, in certainly in Newcastle's kind of level.
Yeah, and when you're talking about, you know, where is that red line, you know, you see the discussion play out on Twitter quite a few times where someone's like, oh, you know, but if you have an issue with this, what about that? Like, well, yeah. That's also bad as well.
Yeah, you can be, that's what I'm saying to like my friends on Twitter who I genuinely love, and they've got like MSB pictures on their avatars and you know, Saudi flags and stuff. I'm going, guys, just, you can be better. You can draw that. You know, the government's not going to do it. The governing bodies of FIFA and other places, they're not going to do it for you. So you can draw a red line and go, I'm not going to support Newcastle United before again, because this, quite frankly, has gone past. This is beyond the pale. This is bullshit.
So this will be, I suppose, an important philosophical quandary if this does play out and if they do end up taking over. Where can you forgive a fan for supporting their football team, supporting their local club, supporting their city? You know, we talk about that red line. Where does it become a problem then? Because there will legitimately be Newcastle fans who are totally oblivious to where this money's going to come from, but they're going to see a boost in their football club. They're going to see a boost in the economy of their city, which is, to be fair, one of the main issues outside of football with Mike Ashley is the fact that the city has seen none of, you know, has not benefited at all from, you know, from his tenure, I suppose. But so, yeah, Pete, as a Newcastle fan, you know, and with mates who are Newcastle fans, kind of how do you weigh this up? Because my brother is a Newcastle fan, and it's interesting talking to him because he's, you know, he's very clued up. He's an economics graduate, and he kind of gets it. And he's also a bit like, well, you know, at the same time, we have quite important discussions about, you know, the human rights issues and the issues that he'll have as a fan. And then every now and again, he'll send me a photo of Kylian Mbappe in a Newcastle shirt. So, you know, it is a genuine issue that fans are going to have to weigh up.
Yeah. The latest one was Gareth Bale moving to Newcastle as well. So where do you stand, as Vish was just asking, Pete, as a Newcastle fan?
I think I've said it before on this podcast, if there is a Saudi takeover, I can't in good conscience sort of say that I'm a Newcastle fan. It changes a lot of things for me. And I think it is important for everyone to assess what your football club stands for in the community, because we are constantly told that football is a force for good. I would also maybe think about if I am willing to let countries come in and spend money and to prop up the lack of investment that my own government has made in my area. I would possibly think about being a little bit more politically activated when it comes to, you know, election time, and maybe voting a little bit more and being more of an activist. If you genuinely think that the money being injected from outside is the only way that your area is going to get back on the up and up, then I think the country as a whole has got a big problem. So no, I think it will affect my relationship with my football club. It's not going to take Les Ferdinand away from me. They'll never take Les Ferdinand away from me and the memories I enjoyed.
It's heartbreaking to hear that. But whilst we're on the subject, could I tempt you to come and become a Brighton supporter? If that were to happen.
Ooh, sneaky. Seems a little bit weakness.
This is transfer fan deadline day. Outrageous. Luring me in. God.
Not even Adam Lallana. Is that not enough to tempt you to be a Brighton fan?
A very Newcastle signing. Let's
talk about transfers, because the window opened on Monday, the day after the Premier League season ended. Vish, you talked about that ticker going up and sort of seeing the transfers flood in over these summer months. Well, it's actually weeks this time round. But one of the deals that has been done, Adam Lallana joining the mighty Seagulls on a 3-year deal. It's a free transfer. And I think that the thing that really probably lured Adam Lallana to Brighton.
Lallana Lua.
is the fact that there's a possibility he can go into coaching after. And I will preach about how brilliant the facilities and the infrastructure is down at Brighton. If anyone's been down there, you'll know what the training facilities are like, and the way the club is run is brilliant. So I'm super excited about this. Really excited about Adam Lallana. You know, loads of people are kind of saying, like, why are you excited about this? He's, you know, he's getting on now. How old is he? 32, I think.
32,
he is.
Yeah.
But I think we could do with a player like him. His experience, we've got a Premier League winner in our team now. We've got a Champions League winner in our team. We've got someone who will be a huge inspiration to the younger players. And this season particularly, we've seen Graham Potter in his first season in charge at Brighton, giving the younger players experience, the likes of Alexis McAllister, who joined this season. And we've got Lamptey coming through, who's started pretty much most of the games since the restart. There are lots of young players that could really do with having an experienced player like Adam Lallana in the team.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. He'd also, I would say, at 32 and on a three-year deal, and because of his history with injuries, I do wonder actually how much... you'll be able to get out of him on the field. But I suppose it's actually off the field where players tend to have a more pronounced effect on younger players, as you said, because just the standards they generally have, especially coming from a club like Liverpool and what they expect in themselves, suddenly just filters into what other players want to do. And they see someone with his medal haul and think, right, well, I want a piece of that.
Yeah.
I want to be where he's been, and I want to learn from him while he's here. I do, on the pitch though, I'm quite interested to see how it plays out. We've spoken, I think it was even last week, about how good Potter is with his tactics, and, you know, three different tactics in a single game if needs be. And I think Lallana's actually the kind of player who's very dexterous. He works really well in tight spaces. He also has really good vision. And he also, when you kind of let him off the leash from midfield, he gets in really unusual positions. I think he's not the kind of player who's going to Lampard break into the box, but he'll do that little step before where he'll create space out on the left or the right and allow someone else to do that. Yeah. So he could open up the variety of options that Brighton have in their, you know, in their department. The other thing is, as I mentioned before, with his injuries, is you're not going to get the kind of player he was at Southampton, which is he's going to be more like that player than the role he played at Liverpool, obviously, because he's going to get more game time. And there's, with all due respect to Brighton, Jules, I'm going to move my seat a bit away from you when I say this. But obviously, you know, they're not as good, and certainly the squad isn't of that quality.
That's
yeah. So it'd be interesting to see kind of what role Potter has in mind for him, because it does need to be more than a token role of, oh, this is a big player, he's going to affect our kids, because he's going to be on a heck of a lot in terms of wages.
Well, I mean, Leicester were in for them, weren't they? Leicester seemed quite interested. So, let me tell you, it's a bit of a coup. Was it just a decision personally? Maybe he prefers, I don't know, the sea air or whatever, or he just wants to play more?
I think that was a big part of it, moving back down south. He's from Southampton, isn't he? So
my geography is really bad, but they're not very close, are they?
It's about an hour and a half.
Closer than Leicester.
Close enough, yeah.
Closer than Liverpool. Yeah, certainly. So I think that, I think for a lot of footballers, particularly when they get to that age where they're coming towards the end of their career, family is really important. And to be able to kind of be closer to family, keep them all happy, he's got children and a partner, obviously. I think that's a big part of it.
For me it's the lure of the Lallana Lua Lua conversation. They could, you know, whose career at Luton is another Luton.
There you go.
I just would like them to get together and have a chat about Brighton and their experiences.
That would be nice. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I think, as Vish pointed out, he's an all-round midfielder, and he's able to be flexible, and I think that works for Brighton and the way Graham Potter likes to play. In terms of other rumoured signings that could be happening, it wouldn't be a transfer window without talking about Wilfred Zaha.
Oh,
of course.
He goes.
So he wants to leave Palace. That's what Roy Hodgson has been saying. Is it the window it's going to happen, Vish, and will it be to Arsenal?
I was talking to an Arsenal supporting fan of mine. An Arsenal supporting mate, not a fan of mine.
A fan of yours. All right. The Vish fan club. How do we sign up?
One get in the Vish fan.
There's only room for one for every club. So you can take Brighton, actually, yeah. God, what a ridiculous thing to say. I was supporting to a mate of mine who supports Arsenal, and he was really unsure about Zaha. And by the end of the conversation, he kind of thought, well, actually, why not? Because you have someone there who can play out on both wings if needs be, who's very direct, who obviously has a great amount of confidence, and he'll be coming into a side which is still very fragile in that regard. And it could be quite a good thing for both teams. I would say, actually, if Arsenal had a better season than they had now, I think they should probably stay clear. But given that Arteta wants to rebuild and Zaha is not going to command that premium price or that premium club, I think it's actually quite a nice fit, because within a season, they could both be where they want to be, you know, if things play out as positively as they might do next season. So I would say he actually would be a good fit at Arsenal. But I mean, that's just what my fans are saying.
What do they know?
Where else could you see him Reddit. Going, Pete? Where else could you see Zaha
I think he suits players. He suits a team that has recognised strikers rather than, I guess, Aubameyang. I mean, if Aubameyang leaves, I mean, I think that might be a bit more problematic for Zaha, because obviously he'll be seen as this kind of almost marquee replacement when that's not his class at all, I would say. I could see him at Chelsea whipping balls in for some pretty decent
finishes.
They've
got so many, though. Yeah. But like... they send him straight to Vitesse, haven't they?
This is another one for Arsenal fans. If you're listening, let us know your thoughts on this one as well. Pete, what do you think of this? It's the Thomas Partey. I think that's how we're deciding to say it. Partey?
Partey!
Thomas Partey. Arsenal have apparently bid €25 million for him, which is only half of his release clause.
And a Guendouzi.
It was rejected.
Have a Guendouzi as well.
Yeah.
We'll stick that in as well. Come on.
So what's going on there?
Well,
Arsenal
be Arsenal-ing. I mean, Simeone wants to keep him. He's made that very, very clear. And if teams aren't meeting the exact requirements in which to get him out of the club, they ain't going to get him. So it's as simple and as unalloyed as that, I would say.
There we go. That's it. Transfers wrapped up, Vish.
Yeah. I was going to say, actually, it's actually kind of sad that Matteo Guendouzi, having started the season, you know, when Arsenal were doing poorly, as someone that you'd identify as one to work with, to keep alongside Bukayo Saka, who could lead this revolution. Yeah. And now he's just a make weight in a deal. Yeah.
Sad.
Man up. That's what I have to say.
See, do you want to be in with this crowd, Pete?
they sound horrible, don't they? I was not expecting
Savage.
This. South Coast vintage clothing purveyors, Brighton.
What's Adam Lallana got himself into?
That kit has massively grown on me. On the final day of the season, I was like, what is that? When I was watching it on the screens, and then I thought... By the end of it, I thought, do you know what? I actually quite like this retro collar.
Oh, yeah. I was just mainly talking about the general vintage clothing scene of Brighton.
But there we go. So that's transfers wrapped up for today. I'm sure we'll talk more about this as the weeks go on. But for now, Pete, it's over to you for, God forbid, another mystery noise.
She's wearing you down bit by bit.
These Brighton fans, they're so
just
rude.
Negging you.
I know,
to get
right?
You as a Brighton fan.
Yes, I've got a mystery noise. You've got to guess who is making the mystery noise, or possibly just what the mystery noise is, all right?
Okay.
Here's this week's.
The Boggy Man.
What?
I'll play that again.
The Boggy Man. The Boggy Man.
It's someone trying to say Aubameyang.
The Boggy Man.
A Baggy Man.
The Boggy Man.
What?
That's Michael Owen.
Go again?
Boggy Man.
Right. Let's have a think, shall we, Vish?
Let's have a think.
You think it's
Vish
Michael Owen?
Vish reckons it's Michael Owen.
I think it's Michael Owen, yeah.
We're going to find out at the end of the show, if that's right with you guys.
Of course it is.
Lovely.
We'll take a break after this. We'll find out what Pete's noise is and be talking about some of our favourite moments of the season.
A Boggy Man.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to The Football Ramble with me, Jules Breach. I'm here with Pete and Vish today, and it's time to look back at some of our favourite moments of the season. I mean, there's been some good ones. We're talking kind of about, rather than the teams we support and moments on the pitch, more of the kind of memorable moments on and off it. So Mike Dean's beard has got to be up there. That was not what we were expecting off the back of the lockdown. I mean, everyone grew facial hair and everyone had odd haircuts during the postponement, but Mike Dean growing a sensational beard is not what I expected.
Yeah, and I actually thought, because so many people were growing beards and letting their hair out, that he might do some mad shit, like get a Tyson face tattoo or something like that. Because he's got to do something a little bit different, hasn't he? And go a bit extreme, yeah.
Get those coloured in eyeballs you can get. Yeah. Where you get your eyeballs tattooed.
Just coming back and looking like Takeshi 6ix9ine after lockdown.
I noticed that I put a hat on yesterday. I looked a little bit like a young Vladimir Lenin. That's been my lockdown look. Crossed with an Alan Pardew frosted tips at the moment, which it's a real look.
What about Mossy, John Moss, and his little boots, boots with his name on
there? I think that's quite interesting, because do you remember when we suddenly realised that referees had ego? And we were like, what's going on here? So the
They had marketing power.
Yeah, the referee who got the Champions League tattoo on his arm.
Yes.
Who
was that?
Graham Pohl.
No, it wasn't Graham Pohl.
Who was it?
Charlie?
Oh,
yes. Clattenburg. Lovely Clats. Old job.
Obviously, you know, Deeney, and then, Mossy on his boots. Also, if you're trying to gain the respect of players who are, you know, as young as your children, let's say, why are you going to come in with some, you know, custom shoes? Because they're just going to rip you, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're not going to respect you.
I kind of like it, though.
It's like a dad walking into, like, a room full of his son's mates and giving everyone fist bumps. Which I suppose you legally have to do now.
Where do you kind of stand on people, human beings, not necessarily
on people. I will happily stand on them.
Not necessarily footballers, but anyone who comes in with their name embroidered on their shirt / shorts.
Well, I remember, I think I said this in the podcast before, I remember my agent giving me, ex-agent, giving me, when I turned 31, a massively oversized classic Newcastle shirt with Donaldson 31 on the back. I'm going, I'm not really that pleased. I'm 31. B, I don't want a name on the back of my shirt. Awful, awful stuff.
My brother is a Newcastle fan, as I mentioned, and when we first had a trip to St. James's Park when he was younger, he wanted his full name on the back of the shirt. So we had to come back the next day because they had to search in their stockroom for smaller letters.
Oh, sugar.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh, of course. Yes.
And so we did get it, and it just goes right from one sleeve to the other.
Is it absurd? So they didn't go for like the circuit?
Well, no, they couldn't.
The arc.
They couldn't because it was like eating into the numbers. It was like a little Pac-Man, basically, on top. So
if you were a footballer, what would you have on the back of your shirt?
I've thought about this so often.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I think I would do Vish, yeah. But then I'd want, just to fuck with commentators, I'd want them to say my full name.
100%.
Damn right, yeah. I think before we started working together, and the reason why, actually, Andraja, because the day before we started working together, I was like, I have to learn it, because my one of my best mates from Hartlepool is from Sri Lanka. Our family is certainly, and she's Wanderagla, and the teachers generally, I mean, she was the only person of colour in the whole school, and teachers would almost revel in the fact that they could not get her name right. They would refuse to, they would mealy mouth the kind of blah, 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 blah. And I do find it ultimately massively disrespectful when the first thing that people say in an interview or a chat, they go, how do you say your name? You know what, mate? Learn my fucking name before you talk to me.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It does my fucking nut in. But yeah, where were we? Remember.
Moments of the season.
I have Sri Lankan friends, Vish. Like me, love me. But Sidibe's, I probably said his name wrong, haven't I? Sidibe's sock. His sock, he came on without a sock, guys. He came on without a sock.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it?
And like, I mean, it's bare minimum, isn't it? You're there with one of the most celebrated managers in world football. He turns around and your player's about to come on and he's only wearing one sock. Wonderful.
These are the moments we love, though. What about yours, Fish?
Mine is fairly recent, and I didn't think... It was something that really took me by surprise and filled me with quite a lot of joy, but it is the double act of Roy Keane and Micah Richards.
Oh,
no, yes.
I think, like, I would
every
never...
every week, isn't it?
Inject me with it.
Yeah, I never thought that they would be a particularly good pairing, even though, kind of separately, I think Micah Richards is a very, very good pundit, and Roy Keane is a very entertaining pundit. And they just threw them together, and it's so good because... I think Roy Keane actually loves Micah Richards.
I think he likes him. You can see it in his eyes.
Because he, you know, when there was a clip last week of, I think he was filming him for his Insta story, and Roy Keane was not having any of it. And then Micah Richards, who has one of the most infectious laughs going.
He's joyous, isn't he?
Yeah, he sets off, and it's really hearty, and it comes from so deep and such a lovely place, clearly.
Yeah.
And Roy Keane smirked, and it was so sweet. And I just want so much of that.
Yeah.
I also want kind of Roy Keane and Graeme Souness bare-chested in oil scrapping at each other but I want to be kind of nourished by the wholesomeness of
well,
Keane and Richards.
I mean, people laughing and smiling is infectious on telly,
true.
Isn't it? And it's what we like to see, and I can say from working with Micah Richards, he is exactly as he is on screen in real life. He's an absolute joy to be around.
But it's so rare in football journalism, and certainly television journalism, where just people who have played the game still have some joy left in their heart for it. That's why Wrighty's been working for the best part of 25 years because he loves the game and he brings it to the fore. He's not dull. He's not boring. He loves it. And Micah Richards,
it's passion,
wow,
isn't it?
It's passion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's why we're watching.
Yeah, I mean that's a great point, because both of those two players have passion that manifests itself in very different ways. Like Roy Keane is full of rage, and Micah Richards is full of joy, because you know If you're Micah Richards, you'd have a legitimate argument for wondering if you kind of wasted your career after it was such a bright start. You know, I think he was the youngest outfield debutant for England. I think he made his debut
there,
at 18. Yeah, and you know, it kind of fell away. He obviously had a spell at Fiorentina. He ended up at Villa, and he might have wondered, God, if could I have sustained a more illustrious career? And a lot of players are bitter about even, you know, they might have had a similar career to Micah Richards or even a worse career, but they end up really bitter, and it really comes across on TV when they're doing their work. But yeah, Mike is just such a joy, yeah.
And speaking of not being able to pronounce names, people tend to have a difficulty with Micah, whether it's Micah or Micah.
Oh, yeah, what is it?
It's definitely Micah.
Is it Micah?
It's Micah like striker and not Micah like streaker. That's what I was told. That's what I was told. But then when someone said that to me, he then walked into the room and I just couldn't stop thinking...
About
oh my
him
God,
naked.
Is it Streaker, Mika, or is it Striker, Micah? Oh my God!
Streaker, really nice to meet you.
But it's definitely...
Nudie boy!
Micah, definitely Micah. So to bring things down after being joyous about Micah's wonderful laugh, my favourite moment of the season, and sorry Arsenal fans, this isn't actually anything to do with Arsenal as a team. I just thought that the shithousery from Neil Morpay was... brilliant after the Arsenal game, and the fact that it kind of carried on for the rest of the season, because he continued to get stick for the incident with Leno, which was a complete accident. It was not intended to injure Leno in any way, and I don't care what any Arsenal fan comes at me with this, it wasn't intentional. Strikers will always go for that ball, and if that's your striker, you're wanting him to go for that ball. It was a complete accident that Leno got injured. But after, obviously, the arguments with Guendouzi and Neil Morpay's...
Propaganda. Yeah. This sounds like propaganda-ish.
And Neil Morpay's post-match interview and him saying that, you know, they need to be more humble with their attitude, then that carried on. And now Arsenal fans hate him. And Neil Morpay has just carried on, kind of rubbing it in their face, giving them the crying eyes every time he gets the camera whenever he scored. And it has been one of my favourite moments of the season, just seeing the way he's dealt with it. Because it must be, there's no sympathy for Neil Morpay with the abuse he's got, but I don't think it's justified. And I think that the way he's dealt with it has been quite amusing.
Amusingly exemplary.
Very
in
amusing.
A sort of weird way.
Yeah, and I've never met Neil Morpay, but I've asked people who have worked with him what he's like. And apparently he is a lovely guy off the pitch, but on the pitch, everyone who's worked with him said he's a nightmare.
Right.
He's a nightmare to play against, and he's one of those that if you support that team, you bloody love him.
Yeah.
If you don't, you hate him.
It's what you want, isn't it? It's like, that's why Newcastle fans love Alan. I mean, obviously they did put it together on the pitch, but you know, your strikers like your Shearer and even Andy Carroll to a lesser extent, just absolute chaos, painful chaos for defenders to deal with.
He, Maupay and Aaron Connolly obviously play together quite a bit, but they go at each other all the time, and it's great to watch. Yeah, they're proper, like, I don't know if they're actually mates off the field, but they're certainly not mates on it, even though they're teammates.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a good dynamic. Just looking into your eyes as you gave that answer, I moved a little bit closer to Pete, because that was, there was a lot of, Jesus, there was a lot
of
Roy Keane in there.
I'm not quite an aggressive person. I mean, it's just passion, guys.
And they, took the piss out of him, and we've stared to them ever since.
Jules, what did you come into the office today talking about?
That's a good point.
Road rage.
Not
Holloway Road-based road rage.
Not from me, by the way.
Not the Catatonia kind.
No, someone was being very aggressive to me on the road. I did not like it.
Yes.
Let's move on and talk about actual football. Tonight, there is...
Yes.
The Championship semi-final second leg between Brentford and Swansea. Swansea take a 1-0 lead going into this match. I cannot wait for this game because it's going to be the last match at Griffin Park ever before they move into their new stadium. And do you know what? I actually fancy Brentford to turn this one around. I think they'll get to the playoff finals. They've got Rico Henry back, who was sent off completely, in my eyes, unjustified in the first leg. I don't think it was a red card. And so Brentford appealed it. They won the appeal. They've got their man back. He started every championship game this season. So he's so valuable to Brentford.
Imagine if he does it again, though.
Oh. And this time it's justified.
Yeah, and this time it's justified. Lovely.
But yeah, let's see. Let's see what happens. Who do you fancy? Do you think Brentford are going to?
I think the romantic inside me.
Ooh, all right.
Inside was the word, the problematic word, wasn't it? The romantic in me would want to see Brentford playing in the Premier League. But I mean, we're all sick of Bournemouth, so why should we want Brentford in the Premier League? That's what I say. No, I would like to see Brentford in the Premier League, because obviously we saw their opposition in there quite recently. So yeah, I would like to see Brentford turn it over. It's a slender lead. It's a slender lead.
Yeah, it can all be done. And I think that it's, as you say, it's kind of this romantic idea that last game at Griffin Park takes them to the championship playoff finals. They'll probably play against Fulham, who have a 2-0 lead over Cardiff from their first leg.
Mm.
So a bit of a West London type of derby in the playoff finals. Could be quite exciting.
Yeah, I'm all over that. I'm a West London boy, so I was born and raised in Ealing. I used to go to Brentford a fair bit. And I've got a lot of Brentford supporting mates, so... I mean, I feel like we've all picked them here, so they're going to lose. But but it was also it's a really shit thing to say when you support a club that are always going to be comfortable in the Premier League. And that thing to say is, oh, it'd be nice to have a new team up. As if, like, oh, no, we're bored, take them away. bring back the others.
Dressed up, bring it.
but, yeah, I mean, it'd be really nice to see them. But also, they're just a fascinating club as well. The project they're in and, you know, how they've approached recruitment and even their style of football and... You know, if they don't get promoted, they're just going to be picked off.
I know. This is a sad thing.
There was that video of this box of bread that all these monkeys were running at and picking
Where
out.
Are you going with this?
And so someone quoted it and said, Brentford when they don't get promoted. And it's just other clubs coming in. And like, because even Said Benarama was, he's already been linked to Chelsea, Arsenal, Aston Villa, Leeds, who played in the championship with Brentford, so it's just going to be open season on all their assets. And so for that reason, if they don't go up, I hope they can hold on to them, because obviously the new stadium's looking pretty dandy. But I kind of hope they do up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, an easy commute for me when I cover
a
game.
Nice, isn't it? It's nice. Sam Saunders, who used to play for Brentford as part of the coaching staff there. Now I worked with him on the highlight show the other night for Quest for the first legs of the playoff finals, and he did say to me that he is really concerned if they don't go up,
right,
a lot of their best players will leave, and I think they're expecting that to happen. So for the sake of the future of Brentford as a football club, I really hope that they can do it.
Have they not got a really sort of interesting sort of youth setup kind of production line? They don't do things the same way that other championship teams do it in the youth team. So they'll always have that kind of, hopefully if the money stays around, they can still continue to play this kind of like cute, almost, you know, Newcastle United 15 years ago kind of way of picking up kind of offcuts. And I could see them doing something again in the playoffs, certainly next season. But yeah, you're right. They are. It is going to be just carrying, isn't it? It's just going to be...
Yeah, this feels like it's their moment, and they've got to make the most of it. Staying in the Championship, Let's talk about Neil Warnock, because he's staying on at the Borough.
And Dubs.
I am pleased for him, and I'm pleased for Borough fans, because this could be... do I say it? Could he take them to the playoffs? Could he take them up to the Premier League next season?
I feel like he can do anything. He knows that league inside out, doesn't he? This is, what is it now, like 11 years since he said he'd never work again after that? what is it, at Palace, I think? Yeah, it is quite exciting, because he's also... He's
a character, isn't
yeah,
he?
But he's yeah. been old for ages. Do you know what I mean? And he still has that kind of energy for the job. And he's always entertaining. He's got, obviously, you know, whether you align with his political views or not, and he's very vocal about them. He's always got something interesting to say, and he always kind of loves rubbing other managers up the wrong way.
I'd
more
it.
Of him. Yeah,
he's going to enjoy time under Gibson, because Gibson's just the kind of bloke who gives managers time. Sometimes to get themselves kicked out of the club, but a lot of the time they don't. I think Gibson, in every interview, he's been such an incredibly important person in the North East and in Middlesbrough, which, you know, isn't the most moneyed part of the world, obviously. But he's been such an important part of Middlesbrough's success, and I think playing under him or managing under him is such a unique job in football.
Yeah, and that's what Neil Warnock has said. He said that he just loves playing under Steve Gibson, and that was part of the draw. Apparently, Steve Gibson had approached him several times during his career to go to Middlesbrough, and it just wasn't quite the right time.
To get out a championship-free card, isn't
yeah.
it, really?
and now there he is and enjoying his time. And we talk about the fact that he is old and he feels like he's been around forever, but he still has that kind of love and that desire to manage and to do something at a club and either keep them safe or get them promotion. And you can hear that. He actually did an interview on TalkSport this morning, and Laura Woods asked him, you know, what did you do in that time off, and how did the job come about? And he said that, first of all, when the job came about, Steve Gibson called him up, and within an hour he was in his car driving up to Middlesbrough from Cornwall. He lives in Cornwall, so it's just like a six and a half hour drive.
Wow.
Yeah, but he said, "Oh, I was so buzzing. I felt like a young lad again. I got in my car and made this road trip up to Middlesbrough," and you could hear just how excited he was to take that job. But then on top of that, he said, in terms of the break, with the way things ended at Cardiff and him having quite a bit of time off in between the Middlesbrough job, he said, "Oh, I just did really like normal, boring things like fishing and feeding the ducks and talking to them sometimes." I don't know.
Is he Tony Soprano?
I wonder what he's been saying to the ducks. What kind of conversation can you imagine him having?
A duck team talk, yeah.
Yeah. You mean that team talk where he swears at everyone but at ducks? Who the fuck are you playing at? He still has a lot of credit in the bank as well. There are players who he will be in charge of who, you know, might not actually know too much about him, but what they will know of him is that he is a manager who just gets things done.
Yeah.
And there'll be older players who know exactly how he works, and the fact that he has worked in the Premier League and that he has such a good, what is it, 9 promotions, I think, in his career? And he's so good at the Championship.
And yet he's regarded as being the most anachronistic manager in world football. But he just loves that league. And as I said, he gets teams promoted.
I'm sure he'll do very well next year.
I hope he will.
Best of luck to you, Neil Warnock, and the Middlesbrough team. Right, that's pretty much all. But we need to get to Pete's mystery noise. The suspense has been killing me.
Yes, we did have a mystery noise a little bit earlier on in the show. It sounded like this.
A baggy mang.
Vish was right.
It's a baggy mang.
Oh, no, you spoiled it.
It was, no, he guessed. I didn't tell him to keep his powder dry until the end of the show, so it's my fault.
I wanted to have a guess.
I got too excited. I'm new to this, so I do stupid things. and this is another one of those stupid things.
Who did you think it was? What did you think it was?
Well, I didn't think it was someone trying to say a Bamiyang. I thought they were saying a boogeyman.
A boogeyman.
A boogeyman. A boogeyman.
That's like the sound of who's that woman out of Little Mix? Bardic.
Oh,
Barinde. Beautiful.
Yeah, we spoke about the taste that obviously you don't have in that team, particular.
You know what? He took a run up. That's the worst thing to do.
He paused.
It's a pause, and he's obviously like looked down at his notes, and he can't read his own writing.
He's definitely spelt it wrong down on his notes. He
looked at it and went, "That sounds too much like a film title." I'm scared of it.
Let's not bother. There we go, Pete. Thank you for your mystery noise. We'll get another one of those on at some stage.
Michael.
Distant future, maybe. Right, that's all from us. Tomorrow, I'm going to be back here with Luke Moore and Jim Campbell. Boys, have a wonderful rest of your sunny day, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, man.
was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.